It is indeed a time for the Crime Report, ladies and gentlemen. Sponsored by the Crime Stoppers, Suffolk, 1-800-220-TIPS, 220-8477. And that's where all calls get confidential, and a monetary reward of up to $5,000 or more could be issued. And that for information that will lead to an arrest. Joe Jacklin, of course, retired NYPD sergeant. He's a former commanding officer of the Bronx Cold Case Squad. Current adjunct professor over at John Jay College and author of the bestseller, The Criminal Investigative Function of Guide for New Investigators, edition number 3 in his day. Highly decorated member of the NYPD. That would include the most notable Department Medal of Valor, the aforementioned Joseph Jacklin. We say a very good morning to the Sarge. Sir, how are you?
Good morning, Jay. How are you?
All is good, my friend. Hey, let's start it off. We're chock full of stuff here, Joe. Let's start off with the Dr. Brent Blue, the coroner, as far as Wyoming, Teton County, and, you know, what we all suspected as far as how Gabby Petito died, and that was manual strangulation slash throttling, hands around the throat, might have been left there 3 to 4 weeks, but the determination became official earlier in the week, sir.
Yes, I mean, like you said, it wasn't really any surprise to anybody who listens to our show. We discussed this in detail last week when we, you know, I talked about it as probably strangulation. Usually when we're dealing with intimate partner homicides, that's exactly what you're looking for. You're looking for a lot of anger. You could probably see that in the crime scene. But if you recall, we talked about where that crime scene, that primary crime scene could be, right? So in the homicide investigation, where you find the body is generally where is your primary crime scene, even if it her person wasn't killed there, because generally it's hard to find out exactly what happened. But you got to remember, we have the body where we refer to as a dump site, right, where the person leaves the body, not the place where they were killed, and then you have the van. And then it could have been a hotel room, it could have been a campground, it could have been anything else. That's what I think investigators are searching through and searching for to determine if they could find any more physical evidence. Strangulation cases, you know, generally points to a significant other. But you know what? Everything still is circumstantial in this case. So they need to get something rock solid that, to get him on the homicide charge. But remember, they're going to get him on the access device, and they're going to hold him until then. He has a lawyer for the access device. So he doesn't have a lawyer for the homicide, but I don't think he's going to let him talk anyway.
Makes sense, Joe. You know, you look at the timeline of everything. I mean, the guy returned to Florida, his parents' home, on September 1, and it would kind of coincide with the timeline, right? The body found with the announcement that late Sunday, the FBI head of Denver with that announcement that the body was found, I think it was around the 19th, right, of September. So it kind of makes sense, you know, in that timeline, 3 weeks, 3 to 4 weeks, Gabby's body there, and of course, laundry making his way home cross-country in Gabby's van and arriving in Northport, Florida on September the 1st. So, you know, the timeline kind of coincides with the findings of Dr. Brent Blue there out in Wyoming, you know?
Well, sure. I mean, here's the other thing. You know, hopefully they tracked him on his trip if they could, right? So whether it's with the cell phone, right, the cell towers as he was traveling, also with you know, maybe easy pass records or some sort of toll pass, you know, try to track his route, because he could have left evidence all over the place. You know, who knows what he had and what he did. So the issue that comes down to, this is a huge crime scene when you think about it. It covers basically 3/4 of the country, maybe. So, you know, investigators, everybody wants to just have laundry arrested for her murder. It's not easy as that. You got to have the evidence. You got to have you got to build your probable cause on that. And, you know, right now, does everyone think that Brian will be killed, Gabby? Yeah, sure, everyone thinks it. But you got to be able to bring it to a courtroom, and you got to be able to bring it to a district attorney. And right now, I think they say you just don't have enough.
You got to have the evidence. You got to have the stuff. And listen, they're trying to build a case, and it'll probably be that of mental deficiency involved there when all said and done. You know, that still does not eliminate the notion of surveillance. You and I have spoken about this, so even though they'll tell you, well, we had an eye on him. Really? What about when he returns September 1st alone? Did it dawn on anyone? I mean, come on. The whole thing's great. Well, now they got cadaver dogs. Go ahead, Joe.
Yeah, with her van, though, too. I mean, that's the other thing. He, you know, it's not only does he return, but he returns in her vehicle. So, and there's no Gabby. I mean, that's just, you know, talk about red flags.
You know, the beat goes on. Investigations, whereabouts, who knows? Cadaver dogs, now back in Florida. You know, listen, it just seems to me that they don't have a clue where this guy is. It's almost as if he is and went invisible. This is unbelievable. So we'll see. Is he alive? Is he dead? I mean, who knows at this point, right? I mean, we are, what, October 15th here? So, you know, you're 4 weeks into this and beyond. You know, you're 4.5 weeks in, you know. So we'll see what happens. But kind of a crazy story as it continues to be that. Actually, 6 weeks in since he returned. He turned home on the 1st of September, so we'll see what transpires. Seems like something, you know, gets out every other day. We'll see. Joe Jalko on the crime report. This is a crazy story, Joe. We had an officer, NYPD, Yvonne Wu, charged last night now with a murder and attempted murder for allegedly shooting her ex-girlfriend, killing the woman's new lover. You know, this jealous fit of rage. 5-year veteran of the force snapped, allegedly carried out this double shooting. Quite a scene, Joe, over the last couple of days there in Brooklyn, huh?
Yeah, no, and they're also trying to figure out, you know, how she gained access to the girl's apartment, too, so there's going to be probably a burglary charge into this whole thing, too, but, yeah, it is just one of those lovers' quarrels, love triangles, whatever you want to call it. I mean, they haven't really given much, you know, about what the motive was behind it. I mean, we can all speculate what the motive was, but, yeah, it was a terrible case, and you know what? I mean, she waited at the scene. And she was arrested there at the scene, but I mean, my God, it people have lost their minds.
One of those crazy stories, you know. You kind of have to like stop in your tracks and read it a couple of times just to make sure you got it. But man, I'll tell you, that was a wild story. Also, I tell you, we had a lot of news this week. The Sichuanite Tessa Majors as a judge. Threw the book at one of her killers, sentencing him to the max of 9 years to life in prison. And that was the case, was the young lady who was stabbed in and around that park, Joe. A terrible story. You and I cover this. Just a terrible story of this poor girl. And it was about the apprehension of a cell phone, right? All over a cell phone. But nonetheless, you got these kids, you know, 14, 13, involved here, stabbing this 18-year-old to death. Botched robbery in that park, and the judge putting the hammer down here. I'm just wondering how many years this kid will actually spend behind bars. That's a big question here.
Well, generally the way it works is that anything less than 7, you only do half. Anything over 7, you have to do the minimum. So he's getting 9 years to life. So the way I think it works is he has to do the 9 years before they can let him out. But think about it. He murdered somebody or is part of a murder, and he's going to get 9 years. It'll be out, and he'll be in his 20s. You know, this is, you know, when people say that the criminal justice system is too harsh and this and that, I can point to cases like this and say he took a life, and he'll be out in 9 years.
Yeah, pretty much. Just a horrendous story, my goodness. And Joe, you and I spoke about that Morningside Park deal with, you know, the leader of the city and the so-called leader, Mr. de Blasio, and the faux pas and everything else involved as far as really just not having enough patrol out there, right? I mean, that's what, I mean, listen, this is right in the center of it all as far as cashless bail and whatnot, and, you know, taking away units. And this is kind of a derivative of what happened, and it did. And that's something you and I had, you know, deciphered way back regarding all this stuff, you know?
Yeah, no, I mean, it was an unfortunate case all around. But, you know, it was, if you think back to that case now, it's one of the seminal cases where you look at and saying that the decline in the city was already happening at that point. So, you know, the number of robberies and different incidents in Central Park, which you never hear anything about, you know, and then you hear about all the shootings and homicides in Times Square now. The numbers out in even Times Square are off the charts, right? So you're talking about your number one tourist spot has actually become, a crime-ridden in certain respects compared to years past. I mean, things are starting to slowly rear their ugly heads in a lot of different places. But, those in power just refuse to acknowledge the fact that mistakes could have been made with their reforms. And, they won't, instead of maybe trying to go back and tweet things, they double down on them. And that's part of the problem.
Joe Jacklin, the crime report. Here's one for you, Robert Durst, right? The real estate heir getting his sentence, life in prison. No chance of parole, Joe. And that for the murder of his best friend 20 years ago. Over 20 years ago. The guy, 78, was convicted last month in L.A. First-degree murder. The shooting of Susan Berman, point-blank, back of the head at her home. Big case way back December 2000. And all in all, that was it. You know, it was all about Durst trying to put the clamps on Berman to prevent her from incriminating us in the reopened investigation. Remember the wife's disappearance back in the early 80s, Durst. And, you know, Berman provided that phony alibi for Durst. Kathy Durst, the wife, vanished. And then you had, you know, the back. I mean, this, you know, one of the more highly publicized cases where Durst testified he didn't kill either one, but then said on cross-examination that he'd lie if he had, you know? So you finally have a little bit of closure here in the case of Robert Durst, and the guy's almost 80 years old right now.
Yeah, no, I mean, and now prosecutors in Manhattan are reopening, well, not really reopening, but they're reexamining his disappearance of his wife's case, you know, hopefully that maybe some of the things that he talked about in that TV movie, which probably was a big mistake, right? So he was part of this whole, he was arrested here and before the end of the movie that it was about his life and his, you know, interviews and stuff. So he might have talked a little too much, which probably helped investigators, but they might have also provided new clues into the missing case of his wife in New York City. So it's going to be interesting to see how far that goes, because I think that investigators are actively engaged in that case now that he's been convicted and sent to prison, because now you have a little leverage on him. You can maybe get some other information about his wife. I mean, he's got nothing to lose at this point. The only game.
Question. No question about it. A couple of more for Joe. Joe, there's been a spate of hit and runs here on the island. We had a case on Thursday. An individual was driving, hit a pedestrian, killed that pedestrian, and driving while intoxicated. There's been a spate of this stuff. You know, there's been at least a couple over the last few weeks, and it is unbelievable. People leave the scene. I mean, how many times do we talk about this stuff, right? One guy left the scene, actually came back because his mother urged him to do so. This Jason Hank, a 24-year-old. And nonetheless, you know, the guy was impaired. You know, it's unbelievable. Came back to the scene, bloodshot eyes, alcohol on his breath. And, you know, the beat goes on. But, you know, you and I, we speak about this stuff all the time regarding this stuff.
No, it's quite unfortunate. And the speculation is that the individual who left the scene is intoxicated too, which doesn't help your case. Listen, God forbid you ever hit somebody, just stay at the scene. You make it 100 times worse. Think about this. You leave this person behind you, you know, dying, and you could have maybe called an ambulance, get some help. And listen, that's why we, you know, a lot of times they call them accidents and things happen. But once you flee as now criminal, and it's just something that we, you know, we need to start getting that message, that public message out. You know, that's something that needs to be done too.
No question about it. Interesting story that came through last night regarding the Parkland school shooter, Nicholas Cruz, and the fact that, you know, he's going to, you know, have kind of one of these pre-trial deals and with a plea of guilty. The kid who's accused of killing 17 a couple of years ago. So in essence, you know, that's how it's going to be. And I guess it's all about the determination, Joe, of death penalty, life in prison, that type of thing, right? I mean, it's about, you know, trying to kind of set it up in a pretrial sense, right?
Yeah, no, I mean, this is how, you know, the criminal justice system, we know that there's all kinds of reforms and all kinds of different things in place. They don't want to, you know, it's a measure that also saves money, right? So you don't have to go through all the trial stuff and everything else. You know, listen, we might not, you know, like it, but I mean, I'd like to hear what the victim's parents have to say about all this. I mean, that's where I think that, you know, the media needs to step up to the plate, do stuff like that, which they haven't really been doing, right? We haven't really heard the victim's story in the last couple of years. It's all been about the criminal and everything else. And what about the victims and their rights and everybody else and the families and the people left behind? Where are those stories? Why aren't they being told? And I think that would have been that would be important in a case like this.
No doubt about it. One more for you, Joe, and I know you love this one, and that is 8 conductors of the Long Island Railroad now being investigated as far as not, you know, kind of doing their jobs. They're not punching the tickets. They kind of a sting operation. You know, we know what happened. You know, this has been ongoing, right? Either you're not punching a clock or you're not punching a ticket. You know, which way is it here? You know, who's watching the store of the MTA and all this nonsense? Here we go again. Not punching tickets. There was a guy, what's his name? Robert Anderson, way back, who they, you know, there was a sting on him that he was giving them out to people, not, you know, confiscating the tickets from commuters and then passing them out to friends or whatever. I mean, come on. I mean, how many times are we going to go over this stuff? It is unbelievable. It really, they have no writers to begin with. And they can't even do their jobs, these guys. I mean, it is unreal. Who is watching the store here? You know? Well, I mean, it's unbelievable. Well, Carolyn Bacorny, come on, wake up. Somebody wake up.
Well, like I said, well, listen, I mean, in this way, at least they were proactive, right? So they must have gotten some sort of complaint or something happening, and they did an investigation. So I think that's a positive here. I saw this article too later. I would have definitely sent it to you to tweak you a little before 4 a.m. this morning to get you all riled up. But, you know, there is some proactiveness here. I think there is there's a silver lining in this cloud here. So they did an investigation. They did a sting, and they got this guy. Not only was he collecting tickets and giving them to his friends, but they were using it to get refunds. So people who are paying tickets, ride the thing, giving the train. I mean, that's the real crime here, right? So, I mean, talk about you're stealing from the whole system, and then they keep on raising rates on you. I like to know what they're going to end up doing with this Anderson guy. You know, this is some serious, these are serious charges here. I mean, they kind of make it like it's not a big deal, but it is a very big deal.
It's like a big joke already, you know? It's unbelievable. You read this stuff, and maybe people don't absorb it as we do because, you know, we report on this stuff. But it's one after the other, and it's always this loyal and rare. It's like, come on, you know, blame it on the punch clocks. And you know, guys on vacation in Cabo say they're working. I mean, and people wonder why their rates go up, right? And it's unbelievable. It never, never freaking ends. Just wipe the slate clean and get people in here, new people in here to watch the store. It is unreal. And you wonder why the MTA, you know, needs $12 billion as a bailout, right? It's amazing. It really is. Joe Jacklone, The Crime Report, brought to you by, of course, Crime Stoppers, Suffolk County, 1-800-220-TIPS. Joe, have a great weekend. Until next week, sir, you stay well.
You too. Take care, Jake.